There's a jar in my refrigerator that would get me a fine in 11 states. It's whole milk, cream on top, barely yellow, drawn within the last 24 hours from a Jersey cow named Hazel, who I know by name, whose hay I select, whose health I track by season. The milk is not pasteurized. It has not been heated to 161 degrees for 15 seconds to kill pathogens. It has not been homogenized to break the fat globules so they don't separate. It is exactly what came out of Hazel this morning, strained once through a fine mesh filter, poured into a clean jar, and placed in the refrigerator before the temperature had dropped to safe storage levels. In 39 states, this is legal. In 11, it is not. In March of 2026, the New York Times reported that several state legislatures, including some that have historically maintained strict bans, are actively considering bills that would expand legal access to unpasteurized milk for the first time in decades. The movement has been building for years, but it has found new momentum in the Make America Healthy Again Coalition's emphasis on consumer choice in food and medicine. The argument at the center of these bills is simple. If you understand the risks, you should be allowed to choose what you feed your own family. The argument against it is older, and in many ways more powerful. And to understand why it still carries as much weight as it does in state health departments and in the offices of food safety lawyers, you have to understand something that happened in American cities over 100 years ago, something that most people alive today have never needed to think about, something that changed the entire architecture of how the United States regulates food. At the turn of the 20th century, the milk supply in American cities was killing people. Not in the way that unhealthy food harms people slowly, over years, killing them quickly, killing their children. Urban dairies in 1890 through 1910 operated in conditions that would not pass any modern inspection. Cows were kept in dense facilities with minimal ventilation. They were fed distillery slop, the fermented grain residue left over from whiskey production, which was cheap, but which undermined the animals' digestive health and consequently their immune systems. The cows were diseased. Bovine tuberculosis was endemic, and the milk drawn from those cows, distributed unpasteurized in glass bottles across cities that had no reliable refrigeration infrastructure, carried tuberculosis, scarlet fever, typhoid, and several strains of bacteria that we now know to be dangerous across the family of Listeria and E. coli. The death toll was not hypothetical. In 1895, one study estimated that contaminated milk was responsible for a significant portion of infant deaths in New York City. Louis Pasteur had demonstrated by the 1860s that heating liquid killed the microorganisms responsible for spoilage and disease. By 1900, the technology existed to pasteurize milk at scale. What did not yet exist was the political will to require it. That changed as the evidence mounted. State by state, beginning with Chicago in 1908, mandatory pasteurization laws were enacted for commercial milk sold in cities. By the 1940s, pasteurized commercial milk had become the standard across most of the United States. The raw milk that people drank in cities in the 1890s, the milk that killed children, was made illegal at scale. What was also made effectively illegal, in the regulations that followed, was the kind of milk that had never been the problem in the first place. Milk drawn from a healthy, grass-fed, well-maintained animal on a small farm, consumed by the family living on that land, within 24 hours of milking. The distinction matters enormously, and it is the distinction that today's raw milk advocates are trying to get regulators to recognize. The bacterial risk profile of raw milk drawn from a single known animal on a small farm is categorically different from the risk profile of pooled commercial milk in the early 1900s. Modern raw milk producers who operate legally in the 39 states that permit it are subject to inspection regimes. They test their milk regularly for bacterial counts. They know their animals, they maintain temperature chains from barn to consumer. The infrastructure of contamination that made urban raw milk deadly in 1905 does not exist on a small homestead. This is the argument that raw milk producers have been making in state after state for the past 20 years. It is also the argument that has gotten traction in the 2026 legislative cycle, where a coalition of MAHCHA health advocates, homestead food sovereignty groups, and small dairy operators have pushed simultaneously in multiple states for bills that would expand the legal forms of raw milk access through direct farm sales, through herd share programs, through licensed retail pathways that don't currently exist in prohibition states. Herd share programs deserve their own explanation because they're the mechanism that has allowed raw milk access in some technically prohibited states for years. Here's how they work. You don't buy raw milk from the farmer. You buy a fractional ownership interest in the herd itself, typically one cow's share, and pay a boarding fee for the farmer to care for your animal. The milk you receive each week is not a product you purchased. It is the output of an animal you legally own. Several states that prohibit the sale of raw milk do not prohibit an owner from consuming the milk of their own cow. It is a creative legal structure that has survived court challenge in multiple jurisdictions. Whether it's an elegant solution or a legal fiction depends on your perspective. Either way, it has kept thousands of families connected to raw dairy during decades of regulatory prohibition. The science on raw milk is not as simple as either side tends to present it. The Centers for Disease Control data consistently shows that raw milk and raw milk products are responsible for a disproportionate share of dairy-related illness outbreaks in the United States. Between 2009 and 2014, raw milk was associated with 96% of dairy-related illness outbreaks, even though raw milk represents a tiny fraction of total milk consumption. Those are real numbers, and they represent real sick people. Raw milk advocates respond with two challenges to this framing. First, the base rate problem. If raw milk is consumed by only 1 or 2% of the population, and that 1 or 2% accounts for a disproportionate share of dairy-related illness, the calculation of absolute risk per consumer is quite different from the headline percentage suggests. Second, the source problem. Many of the outbreak incidents in the CDC data involve unlicensed, uninspected raw milk operations or milk that was transported illegally across state lines, outside any cold chain or testing regime. The risk profile of illegal raw milk sold in a parking lot is not the risk profile of a legal, inspected, tested farm direct sale. Both of these responses have merit. Neither of them fully resolves the underlying disagreement about acceptable risk, which is ultimately a values question as much as a scientific one. Here is the practical conversation, because that's what this program is for. If you are considering keeping your own dairy animal for the first time, the raw milk debate is a secondary question. The primary question is whether you have the land, the time, and the commitment to care for an animal that requires twice daily milking, 365 days a year, with no vacation, no sick days, and no tolerance for inconsistency. A healthy milking cow will produce 5 to 8 gallons per day at her peak. A Nubian goat will give you roughly half a gallon to a gallon daily. These are real volumes that require storage, processing, and use: cheese, butter, yogurt, kefir, if you're not going to waste the production or become entirely reliant on giving it away. If you source raw milk from a local farm rather than keeping your own animal, the practical considerations include verifying that the operation tests its milk regularly, that you're collecting it in clean containers, that you're refrigerating immediately below 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and that you're consuming it within 1 to 2 weeks. Raw milk does not last as long as pasteurized milk because the live bacteria in it, the ones raw milk advocates credit with probiotic benefits, are also the ones that will turn the milk sour. This is not always a problem. Soured raw milk, if it came from a clean and healthy animal, becomes a product similar to cultured buttermilk. It is not dangerous, but it is not what you poured over your cereal this morning. For families with young children, elderly members, pregnant women, or immunocompromised individuals, the conservative position is to treat raw milk as a higher-risk food and proceed accordingly. This is not a political statement. It is the same logic that applies to eating raw oysters, rare beef, or unpasteurized soft cheese. You can do all of those things. They carry more risk than their cooked or processed equivalents. The question is whether you've made the choice with accurate information. The state bills moving through legislatures in spring of 2026 are asking a question that goes beyond raw milk. They're asking who gets to make the risk calculation on behalf of your family. The pasteurization requirement was written for a world where urban consumers had no relationship with the animals producing their food, no knowledge of how the milk was handled, and no capacity to assess risk. It was written for a world where the infrastructure of small farm, direct consumer dairy did not exist at commercial scale and could not be inspected adequately. That world has not fully disappeared. The CDC data shows it. But the world that the raw milk advocacy movement describes also exists: the small farms, the herd shares, the tested and inspected direct sale operations, and the regulatory infrastructure has not always distinguished between them with any precision. The question for this coming legislative session, for state lawmakers in a dozen states weighing bills that would let a farmer sell you a jar of milk across a farm stand table, is not whether raw milk should be treated the same as pasteurized commercial milk. It is whether a direct, transparent, legally traceable transaction between a farmer who tests their animals and a consumer who understands the product should be treated the same as an anonymous, pooled, city dairy slop operation from 1905. Hazel has a name. You know where her pasture is. You've seen her vet records. You picked up the milk before it was 4 hours old. The question is whether that knowledge is yours to act on, or whether the regulatory framework built for a world where none of that was knowable should be the one that governs what you put in your refrigerator when all of it is,